This conversation between Luke Sewell and Walter Langford is being taped in Luke's home in Akron, Ohio on July 10th, 1982. Luke, tell me a little bit about your early years there in Titus, where you got started playing baseball, and then you went to the University of Alabama, and Joe tells me, and everything. So let's pick it up from there.
Well, Walter, I didn't play too much when I was in Titus. I was too small.
Really?
I was a bat boy.
Oh, no.
And a water boy. And I played very little.
There was an older brother.
I had an older brother.
Who got to the majors briefly.
No, he didn't go. He was
didn't get to the majors.
I had a younger brother that got there briefly. No.
What was his name?
Tommy.
Yeah.
He didn't. I believe he would have been the best ball player of all of them. Though the older brother, stronger, hit harder.
Joe said the same thing.
And could run.
Yeah.
And when the catcher didn't show up sometimes, they'd make me catch. He wouldn't let me play any place else.
I got you started.
I didn't. I played very little.
Yeah.
I didn't play in high school. Never could make a high school team. Didn't play at the university until a junior year.
Really?
That's right.
Now, after you graduated university.
Yes.
And then did you go? Did you sign on with a minor league team?
No. I got a contract. My first contract with the Cleveland Ball Club.
Directly from the university?
That's right.
And Joe too?
No, Joe went to New Orleans.
He'd go with that.
He went to New Orleans for about 3 months. And when Ray Chapman got killed, he went up and got into the World Series.
I know. You just missed that.
Yeah, I came up the next spring, 23rd day of May. Mm-hmm. I'll show you this contract before you get away from here.
All right. Now, you must remember your first game in the majors.
I remember the first time at bat.
Yeah.
It was against Carl Mays in New York.
Really?
It was a year after he had hit Chapman, and they were yelling at him on the bench, don't throw at him. Walter, he had one of his front teeth while Wally Shang was catching, and he shook Wally Shang off, and I looked at him and I thought, that's the meanest man I ever saw.
Yeah. Well, he had the name of being one that threw at batters, that's for sure.
Well,
not just because he hit Ray, but he had that reputation anyway.
I sat in the bullpen, was in the Polo Grounds then. We used to sit in the bullpen. Both bullpens were together in center field. He was quiet, never said much. He was down there one day and somebody said something to him and he said, well, they make a living hitting and I make a living pitching.
Yeah.
And if they get too close, I'm going to throw inside.
Well, his delivery also
made
it difficult to pick up the ball and get out of the way, I would think.
Not particularly.
No?
No, I could always pick up a sidearm or underhand better than overhand.
Well,
back in those days, they had signs out in center field, and they'd throw out of those signs.
Yeah.
A little hard to see. But.
And just like maybe you didn't play there, but in Wrigley Field for many, many years, they had those white shirts in the bleachers.
That's right.
Finally had to quit using that section of the bleachers.
Well, they had it all over.
Mm-hmm.
Connie Mack used his left-hand pitchers had a scoreboard they'd pitch out on. It was a little bit different.
There were all kinds of tricks, right there.
Well, there were in those days.
Yeah, that's right.
They've made the game safer. That's one thing they've made it.
Yeah, the batting helmets, among other things.
Batting helmets, shorter field, live a ball.
Yeah, and the fields are more than, maybe it's an advantage also, I think, a drawback. In all the newer stadiums, the dimensions are pretty similar.
Well, they're making them shorter. And
the
home run is what they're trying to feature.
I know. Yeah.
It ruins some hitters, though, trying to hit home runs.
Right. They weren't made for that.
They can't do it, and they just keep swinging.
All right. Now, did you play in the minors, though?
I played about 3 weeks at Columbus.
In 21?
in 1921. Yeah. Steve O'Neill got a hand broken. And there was an old giant catcher, Art Wilson was down there. And they brought Art up here and sent me to Columbus.
Uh-huh.
And they put Art in a couple of games and he couldn't catch, so they sent me back. I hit pretty well at Columbus, though. I did caught well down there.
Well, in 22, your first year, you really got into enough games to count.
That's
you hit 264,
right.
Which
right.
For a beginner is very satisfactory.
Huh?
So you were a backup, you might say, to Steve O'Neill until about 24, huh?
28. They traded him in 1923.
Yeah.
And then they got a hold of a catcher with the name of Glenn Myatt and myself.
Yeah.
Kind of split it for a couple of years. And finally, I got a regular job.
Yep. You and Joe were two of the best-known brother acts that baseball has had, especially playing for the same team.
We were there for
21 through 32, according
to this.
That's right. Yeah.
12 years, I
think. Now, did Wes Farrell ever pitch to his brother Rick? Were they always on the
No, team? No, he pitched to Rick in Boston.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
But Wes was quite a young pitcher. You know, he won 20 games for each for his first four seasons.
I know it.
And that's the only time it's ever happened to a rookie.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they were ready to send Wes out, send him back to Terre Haute, Indiana. They came around to me one day and said, we need some pitching. Said, who should we start? This was about, I guess it was in May.
Uh-huh.
And I said, pitch that kid Farrell. Oh, they said, he can't pitch. And I said, try it.
Somebody was sure off base with him.
Well, that's right. He was kind of an eccentric boy. But he was out of the country. You know,
mm-hmm.
You get the boys out of the country, but you don't get the country out of the boy. And they were on the defensive.
Yeah. That's right.
Come in on the defensive.
All right. How's a speaker as a manager, a person?
I thought he was a better ball player than he was a manager.
Most of the great stars.
That's right.
Walter Johnson, Ty Cobb, Speaker.
Well, back in those days, the rookies didn't count very much.
Mm-hmm.
I went to four training camps before I got to take batting practice in spring training.
You're kidding.
No, they wouldn't let us in there.
Not even in spring training?
Oh, no. We had to go out at 8 o'clock in the morning, and we had to hide balls. We'd go out, there's four or five of the kids would go out, and we'd pitch to each other, and the old balls would be water soaked.
Yeah.
That's the only batting practice. So you caught batting practice, but you didn't get any hitting.
Joe's case had to be different.
He was altogether different.
Yeah.
He was a regular.
He had to step right in when he got
He was a regular, and he got the hit.
All right, what about, but Speaker as a player was still great when you saw him.
I thought he was still the best all-around center fielder of any of them.
How about Steve O'Neill? Was he one of the best catchers you ever saw?
He was a great catcher around, couldn't run, but he could block the plate as good as anybody ever saw.
I think Joe mentioned that.
Oh, yes. He looked like he'd just stand there with those stubby legs. They'd hit him and bounce it just like they're running into a rubber wall.
And you had some pretty strong players around the infield there. You had Stuffy McInnes for a few years.
Stuffy was...
He was toward the end of his days.
That's right. He came from Boston.
Yeah.
They had Doc Johnson and George Burns when I first came.
Uh-huh.
They got rid of him and got Stuffy in there.
Who was probably a better fielding first baseman than those two.
Well, he wasn't much better than Doc Johnson, but Doc was running out of steam. He was getting old. And they traded George, I guess, for Stuffy.
Huh.
And, Stuffy
Even though George had set a record for two base hits in a season.
That's right.
Yeah.
But he came back. They finally got his new return.
All right. And how good a second baseman was Wambe?
Well, I would say Wambe was better than average.
Yeah, that's for sure.
He was better than average. He didn't rank with the great ones.
Not like Eddie Collins or Charlie Gehringer.
No. But he was a good second baseman, real good one.
He didn't hit for average the way they did either.
No, he didn't hit as much.
Yeah.
But he was a good second baseman.
And his name is down in the, it'll never disappear from the record
book. That's right.
With that unassisted triple play.
That's right.
At the right time. Was Smokey Joe Wood a pretty good outfielder?
Yes, he was. He wasn't a terrific outfielder.
Considering he was converted and all of that, he was...
He could hit left-hand pitcher.
He was quite a hitter,
Left-hand pitcher, He could hit it.
Did he do any pitching at all after he came over to Cleveland?
No, he didn't pitch over there.
Arm just didn't have anything left.
No, well, he could throw hard, but if he'd throw one day, he couldn't throw the next.
Yeah. Charlie Jameson was quite an outfielder, wasn't he?
Great outfielder, great left fielder.
Yeah. And I remember that he was mostly a leadoff man.
Leadoff.
Why did they let your old friend Rick Stevenson get away to the Cubs?
Well, Steve had his arm. When he was a little fellow, that arm got broken out of joint or something, and they never got it fixed up. And his arm didn't flex. And he couldn't throw, he kind of heaved the ball. And he was an infielder.
Yeah, I know that.
And they tried to make a second baseman out of him, and he just couldn't. He couldn't snap the ball around.
Yeah.
Then they tried him in the outfield, and he fell down one day. And they shouldn't have let him go because he was
a good hit.
Oh, yes, good hitter.
Did they trade him? Do you remember who they got for him?
No, they didn't. They didn't trade him. They sold him. They sold him down to Indianapolis, and the Cubs picked him up from Indianapolis.
Yeah. Well, he sure could pound the ball.
Yes.
With his lifetime, 336. His daughter was in the hospital room when I went there to visit.
Yes.
And she reminded me, I knew his average, but she told me that he had ranked 18th in the all-time list of regular players, but a couple passed him in recent years. He thinks he's around 20th or 21st now. That's still quite an honor.
Oh, he was a good hitter.
Yeah.
A real good hitter.
Yeah. And I lived in South Bend, Indiana for 50 years or so when I was at the University of Notre Dame teaching 43 years in addition to having been a student before. So I met old Stan Kovaleski a time or two. And really, the 1920 series, I had been a great follower of baseball as a kid. I was born in 08 and had been following Major League ball from about 1915 or 16 on. But the series of 1920 was when I really got red hot on baseball, and that was his series, boy.
That's right.
Without much doubt. And so I met him a few times in South Bend. He was quite a pitcher, wasn't he?
Great pitcher.
Yeah.
I used to hold meetings. Great spitball pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
They'd hold meetings and they'd say, Kobe, how are you going to pitch to this fellow? I'll fire my spit already. And he was the first spitball pitcher I ever caught.
Is that right?
I think he hit me on the toes as much as he did the mitt.
Yeah.
He'd laugh. I'm kidding. He was a great fellow.
I would think a spitball or a knuckleball in those days with the little mitt you had would be pretty hard to hang on to.
Well, after you get accustomed to catching them, it's not bad.
I guess.
See, the big mitt doesn't help you in a knuckleball.
No.
Because you have to move fast to
try.
And the reason they call it a butterfly ball, you catch it just like you catch a butterfly. You just grab at it.
Yeah.
And if you wait until it's right on you and grab it, you can catch it most of the time.
How about comparing George Yulee with Kovaleski or Sarge Jim Bagby? How was George?
Well, George, I think if his arm had been a good, strong arm,
yeah.
I think he would have ranked high in pitching. I thought he was about as good one-game pitchers I ever saw. In other words, if you had one game you wanted to win, and he was in good shape, I just assumed trust him with it as anything. Jim was just an average pitcher back then.
Who had one big year.
One big year.
And George yesterday reminded me, which I kind of recall, that a number of his wins that year were in relief. He'd go in and they'd get a few runs, and all of a sudden he'd be the winner.
That's right. Well, and a lot of them do were. It'd be 12 to 8.
That's right. His ERA wasn't.
No, his ERA wasn't good. He was a good hitter, though. He had knocked a lot of his own runs in.
George did. Oh, yeah.
I saw that. Bagby did, too.
Oh, Bagby, yeah.
Yeah, both of them did.
Yeah, I looked at George's batting. I've Xeroxed out of the Baseball Encyclopedia the career of everybody, and over here for the pitchers it gives their batting averages. Oh, George had quite an average.
Well, they used to use him as a pinch hitter.
That's right.
They didn't pay him for it, but they just used
him. Yeah, well, now let's see. How good a pitcher was Joe Shea?
Joe never did develop into a top flight pitcher.
Yeah.
He had control problems.
Yeah, so many have had that.
He could throw good, throw hard, had a good curveball, but he wasn't consistent at all.
Now, when you became a real first string, almost catching all the games in 26, and you finished second, you had quite a fight for the pennant that year with the Yankees.
We lost it the last series.
Yeah. Who were you playing in that last series, you remember?
We played the Yankees.
Played the Yankees.
We did in Cleveland.
Yeah.
They beat us 3 out of 4.
Well, that's happened to other teams, too.
It happens all the time.
Yeah. I can remember the year when the Red Sox, under Joe McCarthy, had a one-game lead going into a final two-game series with the Yankees and had Parnell and Kinder ready to throw at them, and both of them got beat.
That's right.
Yeah, son of a gun. I was, I gather that he wasn't all that much of a manager, Jack McAllister.
Well, now, Jack shouldn't have been a manager. He was a good man in a coaching job. He wasn't good on the lines, but he kept a good morale going on the court.
Mm-hmm.
He kept good communications.
Yeah.
And he fit into speakers set up all right. See, we only had one coach, that was Jack.
Is that right?
That's
in those
right.
days, one coach?
One coach.
The manager would be the third base coach usually?
Well, no, he'd have somebody else.
Yeah.
I started coaching third base before I started playing.
Be a player coach.
But Jack didn't, he didn't get on the lines much, but you see, the speaker was in the field. And when you're in the field, you need one good coach on the bench, and Jack. He was a great morale builder, but he couldn't manage much.
Yeah. Well, that shows in a sense that he never caught on as a manager elsewhere.
No, he didn't. Jack was a great fellow, but he couldn't.
That was your highest average season for average, I see, in 27.
That's right.
294. Mm-hmm. Just about hit that 300.
I hit over 300 and something happened. I got hurt or something and went way down, and I came back but couldn't get to 300.
Yeah, But and that was about the time Willis Hudlin was beginning to.
Well, he came in, I think, a year or so later. I don't think he was there in 27.
I don't have it right here, although I've got it as a little note that Hudlin appeared, but maybe he didn't pitch much.
Well, he didn't pitch much if he was there.
I saw him in Little Rock.
Little Rock, how is he?
He's fine, really good shape. Actually, your brother Joe is the most vigorous looking and acting of all the ones I've talked to.
He was, you know, that hunch he has, he was hunting.
Yeah, Riggs and his daughter and son-in-law told me that.
And he fell over.
Yeah.
And he hit against a stone or rock or stump or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he fractured a vertebrae.
Yeah.
And that thing.
They claim that he's probably an inch too shorter than he used to be. The way
easy.
To,
yeah.
Because
he has a lot of vitality.
Oh boy, and very positive on everything. All of them amazed me, really, that I've talked to in their physical being, well-being at this time, considering their age and everything. Charlie Grimm is on the way downhill, there's no question.
He has a lot of arthritis, doesn't he?
Well, it's not so much arthritis now, a little bit of heart trouble, but his wife tells me that the doctors feel he has pancreatic cancer.
Oh, good.
He's 84. Will be next month. And George Yulee was hospitalized in December, you may or may not know that. And says, I just don't have any steam left. I get up all across the room and I'm puffing, just winded.
He has emphysema.
He didn't say so, but I knew he had to.
He has it, and it's terrible.
Yeah, that's
on
right.
On days like this, if he gets out of an air-conditioned house, he just sunk.
Yeah, and you don't ever get rid of that one.
No, you don't. Not to the extent he has.
But Larry French, 75, a year older than I am, and he looks like he could go out and throw 9 innings today.
Is that right?
Gee, he was just a stalwart. And, well, Carl Hubble is in fairly bad shape. He had a stroke a few years ago.
Is that right?
Two, maybe more than one, but it left him somewhat impaired on the left side. He has a little limp, and as he pointed out to me as we were walking along, he says, as you can see, I don't have much sense of balance. And he was kind of weaving.
Weaving on.
Yeah. But his mind was perfectly clear, of course. Another one that looks real fine is your old friend Mel Harder.
Oh, well, Mel is, I don't think he's 78.
Oh, yeah, he's over 70.
Is he?
Yeah, I don't have it right here with me, but he's over 70. Not too much, but a little over. And he's in Sun City, Arizona.
Is he there now? He was back in Cleveland.
No, he's been in Sun City. He told me maybe he comes back here part of the time, but he's lived there for, I asked him specifically, and several years.
Well, he had a home there, and his wife didn't like it, and she wanted to come back. She was, I believe, from Cleveland area. Did he lose his wife?
You know, that's going through my mind. I think
believe
this
he
may
has,
be his second wife.
Of course. But I know that
first
a few years ago, they inducted him into the Ohio Baseball Hall of Fame. And he was living here then.
Yeah.
His wife wanted to come back to this area, and he settled here.
I think then maybe several of them have a second wife. Mm-hmm. Larry French just remarried last December. His first wife's closest friend, he married her. And I don't know whether Charlie Graham's wife is the same one or not. She looks considerably younger than Charlie. She's quite a gal. She was an actress and singer.
Well, I think it must be his second wife.
But they told me they've been married 27 years. To me, that means it has to be his second wife.
Yeah.
Anyway, in 28, Roger Peckinpah came in as manager.
Peck came in, yeah.
How was he?
Peck was an average manager. I never thought Peck didn't keep good records on players, which if you're managing, you have to do it. You either have to do it mentally, you have to do it.
That's right. Or both.
And Peck didn't do that. And then he'd go by the book. He was too much of a book manager. I think he was afraid that the press would
get on his back if he
criticized.
He didn't go by the book, and it didn't work out.
That's right. Yeah. He'd go right by the book.
You got to be a gambler now and then.
Oh yes, you got to be a riverboat.
Sure.
He was too easy to figure what he was going to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I thought we had some clubs at times could have finished better than we did, but we didn't.
How was Lou Fonseca?
He managed the White Sox. He didn't.
Yeah, no, I don't mean as a manager. He came there as a player.
As a player.
In those years.
He was a good hitter.
Yeah,
a good hitter.
I wouldn't think he was too much in the field.
Well, he was playing second base over in Cincinnati, but they moved him over to first.
Yeah.
And he was adequate. He was adequate, but he was a good hitter.
Yeah. And tell me a little about my namesake who wasn't the greatest ball player.
Sam,
yeah.
He was quite a fellow.
Yeah.
I have a German Luger pistol upstairs. We used to play poker, and the boys would all get in and got going along, and finally Sam got in debt to me about $20. And we were on the train coming back from St. Louis, I think it was, just about the end of the season. And I said, "Hey, Sam, don't forget the 20 you owe me." Well, he said, "I'll pay you right now." And he went back and opened his suitcase and pulled out a World War I German Luger pistol. I said, "Would you take this for the debt?" I said, "Yes."
For crying out loud.
That's the way he paid his debt. Yeah. Well, a lot of boys in those days couldn't pay him.
That's true. Yeah.
And if you didn't get it at the end of the season, you
never would see it.
So, but he was all right, nice fellow.
Joe told me a good one about him. Said he had trouble with a breaking ball on the outside of the plate, and the one time he went up, I forget against whom, a good curveball pitcher, and struck out three times in a row. And the fourth time up, he took a strike, and I guess it was Beckenbaugh, yelled from the bench, "Sam, you want me to send in a pinch hitter for you?" Sam turned around and says, "No, I'm almost through here. There's not much use."
Sam, one day, we were playing an exhibition game, and I think we had, I've forgotten who was on, Joe Sheehan was one of the base runners, and I don't know who the other one was. Sam hit a ball that got between the outfielders. He was a line drive hitter. He got between the outfielders. And he hit his head down, just running. And he was, and Cheyute was on first. And Cheyute got to running up and down. And he thought the fellow was going to catch it. And he turned around and started running back to him. And the other fellow started running back. And Sam ran by Cheyute. Cheyute says, "Wait a minute, Sam." Says, "You've gone by me, Sam." He says, "Well," says, "you're not going by me any faster."
Well, as long as you pass one, you might as well pass
them all.
That's Glenn Wright was telling me about. 1 year he hit, let's say, 19 home runs. He said, "I would have had 20, but I passed Babe Herman on the base pass."
So that wasn't unusual.
No.
He didn't know which way Babe was running.
Earl Ebro was quite a hitter, wasn't he?
A good hitter.
Yeah.
We came into League Park up here, and Earl Whitehill was pitching, a left-hand pitcher.
Oh,
and he
good
was
one, too.
Sidearm pitcher. And he got Averill up, and Whitehill would wheel all the way around.
Mm-hmm.
And then he threw Averill a sidearm curveball. The first pitch he ever threw to Averill hit it right over the right field.
Wow.
White Hill stood there. It was a big white eye. I knew him too.
Yeah.
Big white eye. Who is this fellow? He was a good hitter. He was tremendous power for a little fellow. He had great arms and shoulders. Mm-hmm. Great arms and shoulders.
Yeah.
You know how they got him, don't you? Bill Evans was general manager of the club, and he and Roy Johnson and Smalley, what's his name, the outfielder, were all in San Francisco, and they were all playing
Smead Jolly. Yep.
They were all in the outfield, and they were all hitting above 350.
Sure.
So the tag out there, the highest tag was on Roy Johnson. He could run and could throw. Smead was a little
hit.
He was a little clumsy.
Yeah.
But I think he led the hitting.
Yes.
And the next tag was on him, and Averill was the cheapest, and so Billy Evans bought Averill because he was the cheapest of the three.
And got the best of the three.
Evans told the story himself. He said, I would have bought Johnson at the same price and Jolly at the same price, but he said, for the money, he said, that's all we could spend, and so I took Averill.
Joe told me one about Smead. Smead was worse outfielder than Babe Herman ever dreamed.
That's right.
They positioned him up close to the right field wall so that he wouldn't fall down too easily, and ball was hit on a line drive. He came in a few steps and misjudged and went right between his legs. He turned around, started back, and it bounced off the wall real hard, went through his legs again, chased it toward the infield, picked it up. The batter was going for third. He throws it about 15 rows up into the seats and then yells out at the top of his lungs, "My God, didn't know I could throw a ball that far."
Ted Lyons was pitching that game. He was on the White Sox there. And Lyons was mad as it went in, see. It cost him a couple of runs.
Yeah.
Lyons told me about this afterwards, and he said Smead came into the clubhouse and he didn't get any hits. Yeah. And he didn't worry him at all about those three errors.
Yeah.
He said, "Well," he says, "I'm going to show you fellas the difference in a hitter in one ball game, double hitter. I'll show you the difference in a hitter. This is just smiling, drinking his Coke, and this time, that ain't a good time. Lyons is going to kill him."
Yeah, I'll bet. Oh, boy. Well, and a couple of old White Sox players came over in their later years with you people in Cleveland, Falk, Bib Falk, and Willie Camp.
Falk was a good hitter.
Yes.
And, you know, he just didn't have the burning desire to play ball.
Must be.
He'd go along for 2 or 3 weeks and just be in a streak, just be knocking walls down.
Mm-hmm.
He'd say, "I'm tired, I think I'll rest a few days."
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah.
He'd do well these days.
Oh, yeah. Well, he'd fit in perfectly.
Yeah, as Glenn Wright says, if he got a hangnail today, they won't play for a week.
They'd send him to the hospital.
Yeah.
Go over and x-ray the hangnail.
I wrote to Bib and asked to talk with him, and he hasn't changed much, maybe, because he replied back, says, "Oh, my health isn't that good. The only person I give interviews to now is my doctor."
Bib was... He was up a fruit tree, pruning a fruit tree or something.
Oh.
This has been a number of years. It fell out down. Yeah. He broke either both legs or both arms. I don't know.
Gee,
and it set him back quite a bit.
Yeah, that's.
I think he coached baseball down at Texas, didn't he, for a while? University?
Probably.
Where
he went to school.
Well, I think he coached baseball there.
And actually, in those days, he was a pitcher.
Yes.
In college.
That's right.
Maybe outfielder too, but...
Well, I think they brought him up as a pitcher.
That could well be.
I think
because in my... I was about 10 years old, and every town had a town team, you know. And I was in a little town in McAllen, Texas, down near Brownsville.
I don't know where you are.
And we were playing a team from Donna. I wasn't old enough to play yet on the team, but I was a rabid fan and saw the game down at the other town's park, and they brought in Bib Falk to pitch for him that day. And it turned into a long game, pitcher's duel, went 17 innings, 15 innings, 0-0, 16th inning, both teams scored, 17th inning, Bib himself knocked in the winning run.
How about
he won 2-1. That was the first time I ever saw Bib. Anyway, Joe Vosmick could hit the ball, couldn't he?
He's good.